This season, we're launching a new episode of The Missing every week. But if you don't want to wait, all episodes are currently available completely ad-free on What's the Story Crime. Signing up is really easy. Just follow the link in our show notes. You're guaranteed to find your new favourite true crime listen. From con men to missing people, forensic investigations to miscarriages of justice, What's the Story Crime is the home for all true crime fans who want bingeable, addictive, crime-based content.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Most missing person cases are not reported on the news. Many of the missing people are quickly found and returned to their relieved families. Others simply don't spark the media's interest, perhaps because of bias regarding race, disability, or class. But when a child goes missing, there's a much greater chance that they will become national news. And in a small handful of cases that many of us never forget, their stories live on and on. Charlene Downs is one such case. The story of the schoolgirl who was 14 when she vanished from Blackpool in the northwest of England in November 2003 became notorious, monetized by tabloids cashing in on rumors and even exploited by the political far right. If you're based in the UK, it's likely that you've already heard about this case. But whether you've heard the truth, well, that's a different matter. The theories and suspects in this case are endless, and I want to give a word of warning here that some of the details that follow are very distressing. But back to Charlene. Who was the 14-year-old girl who vanished during a normal Saturday night out with friends? And how is it that two decades later, despite the fame of her case, that police are no closer to finding her? I'm Pandora Sykes, and you're listening to The Missing, a What's the Story original podcast series brought to you with the help of the charities Missing People and Locate International. They believe that all of the cases in this series could still be solved. This is The Missing, Charlene Downs. Karen Downs can remember the birth of her third daughter Charlene like it was yesterday.
It was Easter Sunday at the time in 1989. I went for my antenatal check and they decided to keep me in. They helped the labour along and they gave me an epidural, and she was born in the early hours of the Saturday morning. She was beautiful. She had lots of black hair, born with a mass of black hair, 8 pounds, 6 ounces.
It was only fitting that the new baby, born at the end of the 1980s, was given a name to reflect the popular culture of the time.
When she was born, I was a big fan of Neighbours. And I says to my husband, how about calling us... I wanted to call her Kylie at first, and he said, I don't really like that name, no.
The Australian soap Neighbours was one of the most popular TV shows, and Kylie Minogue, who played Charlene, was one of the main characters in the show. Karen's husband wasn't so keen on the name Kylie, and so the couple compromised.
So we settled for Charlene, Kylie Minogue's stage name. That's where we called her after.
Baby Charlene already had two older sisters. And 2 years later, Karen had her last child, a son called Robert.
We were living in Coventry at the time. That's where I was born, and that's where my children were born and my family are from. She had her sisters and a brother, and she used to play with the sisters and play with the dolls. She loved animals, loved dogs and cat bait. She loved playing with the dollies. Yeah, she loved the Barbie dolls and her little dollies that she used to play with. She loved anything like that. And she loved dinosaurs, believe it or not. And she used to like the plastic dinosaurs. She used to like to watch Jurassic Park, that sort of thing.
When Charlene was 4, she started at the local primary school. And her mum remembers her as a well-behaved and contented child.
Yeah, she seemed to like school. Yeah, she was all right. She was a good girl. She used to like infants as well. And she liked nursery too. She liked her nursery. She was quite good at maths. Pretty good at maths. She's pretty good. And quite good at English as well. I said she was quite a bright... She's quite a bright little girl, actually. She was a bright little girl. Yeah, she was very caring. And she always said, when I grow up, Mum, she said, I'm going to get a car and take you and my Nana shopping. She used to say, when I grow up, she said, I'll save up and I'll get a job and I'll take you shopping. Yeah, caring that way. She loved her Nana as well. Yeah, yes, she was.
The family lived in Coventry, a landlocked city in the middle of England. It's known for its large concrete buildings and structures, built after heavy bombing hit the area in World War II. But when the schools broke up for the summer, the Downs would head for the coast to Blackpool.
Love Blackpool. My husband loved Blackpool. We all love Blackpool. We used to bring them on holiday to Blackpool every year.
Nestled in the northwest coast of England, Blackpool is a famous British seaside town where families flock to enjoy the beach and spend time along the shops and arcades of the seafront.
And they used to love going on the central pier and things like that. Yeah, and the donkeys. She loved going on the donkeys as well. Yeah, she loved Black. We all loved Blackpool as children when they were kids. Yeah, we always bought them here. Stayed in the B&B. It was only a few days, but it was still a little holiday, Monday to Friday, but it was still a little holiday, you know, for them. We was always determined one day we may live here.
The beach in Blackpool was heaving during the summer. Parents relaxing in creaking deck chairs while children play nearby. Meanwhile, the seafront is lined with colourful, noisy arcades filled with penny slot machines, toys, sweets, candy floss and ice creams. The Downs children were desperate to move there. And when Charlene was 10, that dream came true.
We loved it at first. Yeah, well, I couldn't think of anything better. We the kids loved, oh, jumping up in the air. Yeah, we want to go to love Blackpool. I've always loved Blackpool. And it was our dream to live here. You know, and finally we got what we wanted.
Charlene soon began exploring her new hometown.
Well, it's like a playground, isn't it, really? It's one big, massive playground of the north. And it was a bit like a Las Vegas of the north. And we loved it, the illuminations. It was such an exciting place. You know, that's how we described it at the time.
Blackpool is most famous for its illuminations, a huge light display across the whole town, which draws visitors from around the world. Charlene loved being able to see it from her doorstep.
She used to go on a tram. We used to take them on a tram riding along the illumination with her dad and a bag of chips. She used to love doing that. She did. Loved all that.
It wasn't long before Charlene felt like she was becoming part of the Blackpool community.
She goes to Sunday school. She used to love going to Sunday school, believe it or not. Yeah, she's a little bit religious. Yeah, she liked Sunday school. She'd go with her sisters to the arcades, to a friend with the arcades.
As she entered her teenage years, Charlene seemed to grow in confidence.
Bubbly. She had an infectious smile. She had a beautiful smile. She was bubbly. Cheeky. Yeah, she was cheeky. She was bubbly. She was just lovely, really. She's just like any other teenager, but she loved animals and she loved children and she was a big fan of Darren Day. Oh, she was mad on him. Loved a pop star. She liked Westlife as well and Gareth Gates.
Charlene's older sister, Rebecca, also remembers her fondness for Darren Day.
She absolutely drove me up the wall, Darren Day, summer holiday. Drove me consistently. I've still got it now, actually, on VCR and video. Honest to God, but I can tell you it backwards and forwards. That's how much he drove it into me.
There were the usual sibling squabbles, but Charlene and Rebecca were extremely close.
Charlene was my best friend, even though she was my sister as well, but she was still my best friend. We would normally go roller skating. We had the bandstands in Blackpool. I am going back a few years here, but we used to go up and down the prom roller skating. I remember going up and down the inliners on the roller skates on the bandstands, up and down Blackpool, down the promenade. She looked up to me as she had a problem, like with her mates or something. Any trouble that she had or she couldn't deal with it, she used to come to me. She was basically right by my side.
When Charlene started secondary school, she began running into trouble.
She did get excluded from school, though. They caught Anna's sister smoking, which I wasn't very happy about, I can tell you. I just took it as a normal teenager, because teenagers get rebellious anyway.
It soon became more than teenage rebellion. By the time she was 14, Charlene was being excluded from school on a regular basis. In September 2003, she was given a 2-month suspension for smoking and talking back to a teacher.
And then in the end, just before she went missing, she was looking forward to going back to school. She went missing on the 1st, 2nd. Looking forward to going back on the Monday, on the 3rd, to go back to school. She was all excited because, well, I want to go back now, I've had enough. And I had a word with the school, they'd take her back. Yeah, that was on the Monday she was due to go back.
On Saturday the 1st of November, 2003, Charlene woke up in the family home like on any other weekend.
It was just a normal Saturday. Well, she got up as normal. As she'd got up, had a bath, had a breakfast, put a Darren Day DVD on, sat there watching it. And then she wanted to go, got dressed. She went over the road because there was a lady who'd had a baby. She loved babies. Jack, baby Jack, she went over to see him. A girl over the way, just at the back of us, there was some houses, and she went over there before she went out to see baby Jack. She was, the neighbour had had a baby, and she was out, she idolised baby. She went to see him. And then she wanted to go to the arcades with Becky. So I gave her some money to go to McDonald's. I went shopping as normal, come back, and they'd gone out. And then that was it then. I didn't see her till the evening.
16-year-old Rebecca had moved out of the family home in Buchanan Street to live with a family friend. So Charlene left home alone and headed to her sister's.
She come round, called for me, went out. But there was this guy in question that she went to meet for some money. I didn't even know that Charlene knew him. Didn't even know. But he come round on the bike, and she got some money, come back. We were going out, went to the arcade.
News outlets have reported that Charlene was given £70 by a wealthy local man, but it has never been established what the money was for. Charlene and her sister then went to one of the amusement arcades that Blackpool is famous for and which Charlene loved. From there, they headed on to the local McDonald's.
Definitely a strawberry milkshake. We definitely had a strawberry milkshake, I know that. I think we had a, yeah, Big Mac. We like our Big Macs. Yeah, Big Mac, strawberry milkshake. When we went to Macca's, and then we walked back with our milkshakes towards my mum.
Blackpool is a small enough town to walk across on foot. Charlene and Rebecca headed towards Church Street, where their mum was working that evening, handing out flyers for a local restaurant.
Well, I went to work about 4:45. I saw about 6:45 with Becky walking up towards the direction, because they were the Winter Gardens by the St John's Church. They were both walking up together and they'd been to McDonald's, both holding one of those horrible, disgusting, which I don't like, thick shakes.
The girls had a brief chat with their mum at around 6:45 p.m. before Rebecca went to a phone box to call John, the man she was living with.
It was starting to get, obviously, late.
being this time of year. And I was like that, I've got to go. I went, I've got to go, you know, I've got to be in by 7:15. I spoke to John and I told him I was coming home. I'm on my way back. He went, is it just you or is Charlene coming back? I looked at her, I went, are you coming back? And she was like, oh, no. She shook her head and she said, I'm not coming back. I gave my mum a kiss and I walked off home. So I tried to get her to come home because it was freezing. It was so cold. And obviously my mum was like PRing, leafleting, doing her job. And I went, right then, you're not coming back. She went, no, never seen her since.
Instead of going with her sister, Charlene had decided to meet some school friends who were on a bus headed into town.
I was here on the corner and the bus stop was just a few yards down the road. She went down and met them off the bus. They all come up to see me. They walked up and then they said, hello. She said, hello, Mum. I said, all right. And I said, don't you be late home. And they both said hello to me. Charlene said, where are you going now? And she said, I'm going down to the arcade. I said, okay. I said, don't be late. I said, don't you be late in. She said, I'll be in for about 10. I said, well, no later than 10. And she gave me a hug and a kiss and I said, bye-bye. She said, bye-bye, Mum. I'll see you later. Love you. And they went down in the direction of the Winter Gardens and I never seen her again. That was the last time I ever saw her.
The Winter Gardens is a landmark in Blackpool, famous for holding national and international ballroom dance competitions. It's also on Church Street, where Karen was working, but closer to the seafront. So if Charlene was heading back to the amusement arcades, it would make sense to go that way. The next thing that we know for sure is that Karen arrived home from work with no sign of Charlene. And as the night turned to morning, there was still no sign.
I didn't sleep most of the night wondering where she was. Then we managed to wait till the next day. We went to a friend. She was nowhere to be seen. And I thought, well, she might have stayed at one of her mates because sometimes she had done that before.
It wasn't unusual for Charlene to stay with friends, so alarm bells didn't immediately ring with her family.
The odd time she would stay at a mate's, yeah, the odd time, and sometimes never told me. That's why I never really, I was worried, but I never really wondered, well, we was wondering where she was, but never really overly, because she was at her mate, could have been at her mate's, but we checked her mate's, and when we knew she wasn't at her mate's, that's when alarm bells, we realised there's something wrong here. And then she didn't come back on Sunday. Monday as well, panic started to set in Sunday and Monday as well. That's when I decided to ring the police because I knew she'd be back then. She was looking forward to going to school on the Monday and her pocket money she used to get on a Monday. She'd never missed that. There was something definitely wrong and that's when alarm bells started ringing.
Karen officially reported her 14-year-old daughter missing on Monday the 3rd of November 2003.
You feel sick and empty in your stomach. It's like hollow feeling in the pit, nervous, worried. I was worried what had happened. You know, anybody, where is she? You know what I mean? It's not like her. And it's just a horrible, sickly feeling, awful, awful, sickly feeling.
I think we got a phone call, or my mum and dad, or someone came round. Have you seen Charlene? No, she's not come home. What? You are? Hey? Yeah, well, it's just been like a snowball ever since. Getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
The police responded immediately and sent officers around to the house. As with all missing person inquiries, they began to gather details. They began by gathering details, finding out the facts and checking her usual haunts, starting at home.
Well, they first came round, obviously, took her name, her address, a description, photograph. Then forensics came out. Obviously, they stripped the house from top, but they had to, and they brought a dog in to check round, but there was nothing to find. But I understand they were doing the job. Forensics literally took the place apart, but then they will do. I expected that. You know, that's their job. They're doing the job. We were all interviewed, obviously. Two or three times, in fact.
The police interviewed all of the Downs family in depth and searched the house for clues. And an early lead came from a letter addressed to Charlene from an anonymous sender. The writing looked childlike, but the contents were chilling. It was a letter Charlene had spoken to her mum about previously,
When they did the search, they found it. I thought she got rid of it. We didn't take too much notice of it, really. She said it was somebody in school. She ran it with somebody from school. Bitchy girls at school saying things, yeah.
The letter threatened Charlene with violence.
We're going to do this, that and the other to you, and that I'm going to get you and bury you down under, and that sort of thing. It was horrible. It was horrible, it was.
The writer also used racially and sexually offensive terms to accuse Charlene of engaging in, or wanting to engage in, a relationship with a Pakistani man.
I confronted Charlene about that, and she started crying. She said, leave it, Mum, forget about it. We don't know who it was or anything. We think it was somebody from school, though, because she was bullied. She got bullied at school a little bit, so we believe it was somebody horrible from the school doing that. Police checked for writing analysis and things like that, but they never did get to the bottom of who it was. They never found out to this day who it was.
Someone was clearly angry with Charlene. But was it simply an insult, or was it a genuine threat? One by one, Charlene's friends and acquaintances were brought in for questioning. One of the friends Charlene met on Saturday night was asked to recall her movements. She said she'd left Charlene in town and gone babysitting. But that after she and their other friends had left her, another friend had joined Charlene. With each interview, the picture got more and more confusing. Police were given varied and conflicting accounts of Charlene's movements. All they knew for certain was that Charlene hadn't come home that night, and nobody has seen her since.
There's been that many people saying she was here, she was there, she was everywhere. Different people were saying she was in different places, so we don't know. They've never really settled on anywhere. They haven't really, only the one with Becky, that's all really. Some were saying, because there's no CCTV ever anywhere else.
The police found CCTV of Charlene with her sister Rebecca in the early evening, corroborating Rebecca's account. But in 2003, there were very few cameras in the town, so they couldn't get a complete picture. Coupled with the anonymous letter and the fact that Charlene was due to return to school on the Monday, the police came to the conclusion that Charlene had perhaps disappeared intentionally.
I know it wasn't easy for the police at all, but they classed her as a runaway, and I said to them, no way she ran away. She's all right. She didn't need to run away. So she had no reason to run away. She was okay, but the police tried to say that at first she was a runaway. Then they put it in the Gazette, then they put it on the radio, and then Granada News got involved, but that wasn't until 6 weeks later. Perhaps if they'd have done something before, something might have come up.
Charlene was wearing black jeans with a gold eagle design on the front, a black jumper with a white diamond pattern, and black boots. She was 5'1", slim, Caucasian, and had shoulder-length brown hair. A media campaign was launched with this description to generate new leads, and there were some reported sightings of her after November the 1st.
Somebody said they'd seen her sleeping rough in the bus station with a blanket round her. I thought, well, why would she sleep rough? She's got a perfectly good bed at home. Why would she want to sleep rough? And then somebody else said they'd seen her on a train to Manchester. Police checked it all out, looked on the CCTV, it came to nothing, but there was people there saying this, that and the other. They checked all the leads, but none of the leads, it came to nothing. None of the leads, there was lots of different, it was horrible.
But the police did not manage to confirm any of the later sightings reported by the public. However, after interviewing scores of locals and friends, they confirmed some of Charlene's movements after she'd seen her mum on the Saturday she went missing.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
It's now known that Charlene's friends from the bus had gone home, as they'd said, and she'd met another friend. Together, they visited a takeaway and a bar called Carousel on the North Pier, where Charlene had a vodka and Coke. At around 10:30 p.m, Charlene left her friend and headed alone towards an alleyway near a road called Abingdon Street, which is lined with pubs, takeaways, and restaurants. Charlene was seen walking towards the alleyway, but nobody saw her come out. And this is the last confirmed sighting of Charlene Downs. Police needed to answer why Charlene decided to go there, and they soon discovered that she wasn't the only schoolgirl visiting that particular alleyway. That line of inquiry began to uncover some of Blackpool's darkest secrets.
Little did we know until after she went missing that they were taking her down this alleyway where all the takeaways were. I had no idea what was going on. For 1 minute she wouldn't have been going out. I would have had the police involved if I'd have known for 1 minute she was even going anywhere near there. But it wasn't until afterwards that we were told, and there were apparently 60 girls all underage with these takeaway owners and taxi drivers and things, that they were going to these takeaways, up the alleyways, to the takeaway owners, and they were giving them blowjobs for cigarettes and chips for sexual favours and things like that. That's what came out.
Blackpool police discovered that numerous local girls were being routinely abused by groups of men in the town. And the men were meeting the girls in the alleyway where Charlene was last seen.
What they were doing, the young girls were doing, that's what they were encouraging Charlene. I didn't even know. I was disgusted. According to her friends, yeah, they admitted they were taking them up. They were all going up the alleyway doing it, and Charlene had been given cigarettes and chips. She needn't have done that. She was fed at home. But I didn't even know. I had no idea they were doing that. As far as I knew, they were at the arcades. I was naive and I had no idea because I didn't know about things like that. Dreaming gangs, God. As I said, I was brought up an only child with a sheltered life. We had no idea people like that existed. Disgusting. And I bet the parents of the girls that were going didn't know about it either. Their parents, you know what I mean? So I get judged for it, but then are they going to judge the other parents as well? It's only just come to light after Charlene went missing.
The police investigating Charlene's case suspected that she may have been groomed. But they had no evidence to link Charlene or her disappearance to a specific individual. For over 2 years, the trail went cold. Until then, a major breakthrough in the case.
2006. It was March. And they said, well, the liaison officer come out, because we had a liaison, two liaison officers, in fact. I knocked on the door and they said to me, can we come in? I went, of course. We've got some news. I said, oh, what news is that? Well, the detective, Mr. Paschini, wanted to see you. It was on the Friday, and he said he wants to see you on the Tuesday. So I said, okay, all right. He said, we've got some developments, but we can't tell you now. You need to come down to the police station.
So all the weekend, you can imagine, we're in limbo. What is it? What have they found? Do they know anything? So anyway, the Tuesday came and they picked us up in the morning at 9 o'clock. It was me, my husband and my mum. They picked us up, took us to the police headquarters, sat us down, made us a coffee. And they said, we've got some news for you. And I went, OK. We believe Charlene's been murdered. I went, what? I dropped my coffee in my lap, which I didn't even feel it. It was red hot, but I just was shocked. I was in shock. Murdered. I said, well, where is she? What do you mean she's been murdered? Well, we believe she's been murdered and we're arresting two men this morning. He said they were 99.5% certain it was them. God, I was shocked. My mum was crying. We were just devastated. I couldn't believe. I was in total shock.
They were both in the restaurant trade, close to the alleyway where Charlene had last been seen. As news of the arrests spread, newspapers began reporting the gruesome details of the alleged murder, much of which was news to Karen.
And she was like, we couldn't believe it. So I phoned the police and I said, what's this I've been hearing? And I said, don't listen to everything you hear. Don't listen to that. It's an old rag. Don't listen to everything you read in the rag, meaning the paper. Don't listen to it. Oh, God, it was awful. It was all coming out about what was put in that paper. How they got to find out, I don't know. They said she'd been obviously killed, chopped up, put in a mincing machine. Oh, God. Into a mincing machine, and then her bones were ground to tall grout.
The breakthrough in Charlene's case had come to police as a tip-off from a local man who owned a slot machine arcade and sometimes supplied these slot machines to takeaways. The informant gave police the names of two men. He said that one had murdered Charlene and that the other had helped to dispose of her body. He said he was told this by the brother of one of the suspects after they'd had a falling out. The police considered this a credible tip-off, so they bugged the houses and cars of the suspects in the hope that they might incriminate themselves. In court, Karen heard these recordings, which were of very poor quality, but that had been listened to and transcribed by an officer on the case.
And everything we heard in that court was disgusting.
I killed her in anger, this, that and the other, and the last stab went through her heart and she bled to death and this sort of thing. You could hear it.
The prosecution claimed that the recordings contained confessions to Charlene's murder. They also claimed that when officers searched the home of the second man, the one accused of helping to dispose of Charlene's body, that they had found it to be suspiciously clean, with just one spot of blood discovered, which was too small for DNA analysis.
He pulled the floorboards up, even the skirting boards, literally all the pilaster off the wall, and he denied it in court that had happened, but there was a lady who lived up the road who used to walk past his house and said she saw a big skip outside with a rolled up carpet and all the rest of it. Well, I couldn't listen to that. I run out of court.
The trial lasted 3 months and it made national news throughout that time. In August 2007, after hearing the cases made by both sides, the jury began their deliberations.
We went from May to August for the court case, 11 days waiting for a verdict. You can imagine them, 11 days.
When the jury returned, they told the judge they'd failed to reach a verdict. They couldn't be sure that the men were guilty, but they weren't sure that they were innocent either. A retrial was scheduled for the following year.
To be told it was a hung jury and a retrial. I can imagine. I went mad, I went to pieces, me. My husband, he had to be restrained. He went for the jury, he jumped up and he said, you fucking idiots, bastards, I'm sorry. And he literally went towards the jury to pull him away. The three security guards had to drag him back, he went for the jury. I'm sorry, I don't want to talk, but it was true. He was so angry, he was so upset, as we all were. Oh shit, I couldn't believe it.
As the Downs family awaited the second trial, they were contacted by the police out of the blue. A second trial wasn't going to happen.
And they told us there and then that the trial was going to collapse. They were going to throw it out of court. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. They told me then that they'd had evidential difficulties and it wasn't going to proceed any longer.
Questions had been raised about the quality of the taped confessions. The recordings were so poor that they were almost impossible to decipher. Additionally, the officer who transcribed the tapes had knowledge of the case, which could have caused her to listen for words she expected to hear. Basically, she had bias, and there was no way to tell if this affected her transcriptions. It was a huge error on the part of the police. The tapes should have been transcribed by someone completely unconnected to the case. There were also concerns raised about the tip-off when it emerged that the man who provided it had connections to a food business in direct competition with the defendant's takeaway. With the most crucial piece of evidence now compromised, there was no meaningful chance of conviction. The two defendants were later compensated with £250,000 each. They have always maintained their innocence.
British soldiers who have injuries don't get money like that much money. That was a ridiculous amount of money to give to them. A ridiculous amount of money.
The two defendants in Charlene's case were both Asian, and their links to Charlene's disappearance and the wider claim of teenage girls being abused in the town, as well as dozens of other cases uncovered across the UK, brought the idea of the controversially named Asian grooming gangs into the public consciousness for the first time. Rotherham, Huddersfield, Rochdale. As some of our British audience may remember, this was a huge media story in the early noughties.
It did become a national story afterwards, yes, yes it did, with the grooming gangs and everything else, yes. But it was a good thing really, you know. If a bad tragedy, something could come out of it to save other girls, at least, you know, you'd never want that to happen to anyone else. I'd never want that to ever happen to anyone else.
Over the coming years, a number of grooming gangs were uncovered across the UK, and Charlene became a poster girl for the far right, who were quick to highlight the role of Asian men in abusing young girls. But while political parties and the national press followed one divisive theory, police were forming another. Soon after the end of Charlene's trial, another teenage girl went missing in Blackpool. Her name was Paige Cheevers.
2007 she went missing. 4 years after. After Charlene, yeah. Yeah, they've never found her. As I said, they've never found her. It's unbelievable.
Paige was 15 years old. Her mother had died earlier that year, and she'd left home after an argument with her father. She had a history of being groomed by local men, and after she left home, she had gone to the house of a local man called Robert Ewing, who was a member of the far-right National Front. After a police investigation, Ewing was charged with Paige's murder.
There was blood in his flat, apparently. They had evidence that he'd done it. They've never found that girl's body. He's never said where she is or anything. He got found guilty for a murder, but they've never said where she is or anything. That's a terrible power trip to play that, because they know where that girl is and yet never said.
After a trial at Preston Crown Court, Robert Ewing was found guilty and jailed for life. He had exploited the vulnerable teenager for sexual gratification and killed her when she threatened to go to the authorities. Ewing later died in jail, and Paige's body has still not been found. The parallels were clear. Two girls, both of whom had likely been groomed in the town, both had gone missing, and both had never been recovered. Police looked into a link between Ewing and Charlene, but they never found one. In 2013, a Times newspaper article revealed that both Paige and Charlene had been involved with social services amidst claims of abuse in the family home.
Then my husband, when the kids were small, was a little bit heavy-handed. He used to smack them sometimes, and that's how they became involved. He's not an easy man, and I'm honest, he did slap them when they were little, and he shouldn't have done. He got done for it once. But other than that, when I say neglect, was that because he left me hardly? I mean, I did have food, but my mum helped me out a lot. My mum lived with us as well. And I didn't neglect them, but I couldn't give them everything they want. I couldn't afford everything that they wanted. But it was a difficult time. I'm not going to deny that.
The article contained evidence that Charlene had been around sexual predators for years before her disappearance. I want to warn you again that the following details will be difficult to listen to. In the social services report, there were concerns that paedophiles had been allowed into Charlene's home when she was a young child living in Coventry.
It was my husband who knew this man called George, and he used to bring him round for a cup of tea, and we found out he was a pervert, which we didn't, again, I didn't know about. He was a pervert. But again, he's a friendly guy. He makes friends with people like I make friends with people. I was naive at the time. He was naive. That's how they became involved in the first place, because they said, they come round saying about him being a pervert. I didn't even know anything about it. That's how they first became involved.
Police counted 16 men with convictions for rape, assault, or violence who were allowed to stay in Charlene's family home during her life. Social services had raised concerns after seeing Charlene, age 12, lying in bed with a quote-unquote family friend who then got up and left pound coins on the duvet. And a 40-year-old friend of her father's even admitted to paying Charlene to perform a sex act. Unbeknown to the public, Blackpool police had been investigating Charlene's own family from the moment that Charlene disappeared. Karen admits that the family made mistakes, but she insists that they didn't do so knowingly.
In the very beginning, I understand the other job to do. I get that. And because my husband had brought some drunken associates into the house, and there was a paedophile which we didn't know about in the house, I can understand how they were feeling as well.
A convicted paedophile called Ray Munro was staying at the Downs home while he awaited sentencing for two child sex offences. He was sleeping there the Saturday night Charlene went missing.
He wasn't really a friend of mine. He was a friend. My husband used to go to the pub, and he was actually a drinking associate of my husband's. And he brought him back to the house to have a drink with. Because my husband's one of these blokes who's friendly in the pub, and you don't know who they are. He'd bring him back to the pub and his pals back. You don't know that they're perverts. They don't have it tattooed on their head, do they? And he just brought him back for a drink, thought he was perfectly innocent. He stayed for a while on the sofa, yeah, I let him stay on the settee for a little bit, because he said he'd had a drunken mistake with his girlfriend, and he was going to court on the Monday, but he never went into any more detail, and I didn't question it anymore.
On the Monday that Charlene was reported missing to the police, her dad, Bob, went to court to support Munro at his sentencing.
And on the Monday when he went to court, My husband was shocked. He was sick when he found out that he'd done that to two children. Oh, my God, he would have never come in the house if I'd have known he'd done that.
The night that Charlene disappeared, Karen can provide an alibi for both her husband and Ray Munro.
Saturday night, when I got him from work, he was fast asleep on the... My husband was asleep in one chair and he was asleep in... They'd been drinking all day. And in the house, they bought cans of beer. He'd bought a load of cans of beer in because he'd been paid Munro. And my husband was in one chair and Munro was... And they were both pissed out their heads, if you want me to, for want of a better word, asleep.
At the start of their investigation, police forensically searched the family home and questioned both men in detail. But they did not arrest either Bob Downs or Ray Munro. And there was no evidence of either of the men committing any crime. But the social services reports raise serious questions about how many men could have been abusing Charlene. Men who would have had motive to stop her from reporting the abuse. Was there someone else the police didn't know about? The trail seemed to have gone cold, and the 10-year anniversary of Charlene's disappearance came and went. Despite numerous appeals from the family, there were no significant developments in the case. And then in the summer of 2017, came a breakthrough.
Yeah, takeaway owner, a white guy. I've never heard of him. But he used to groom young girls, apparently, from what I heard. This is what the police said, but they arrested him.
Police arrested a 51-year-old takeaway owner who had recently been convicted of two historical sex offences against teenage girls in Blackpool. One was from 2001, the other 2003, the year Charlene went missing. At that time, the man had owned a cafe and lived in a flat in town. His flat backed onto the alleyway where Charlene was last seen. So was Charlene headed to this flat when she disappeared? Or could this man have happened upon Charlene by chance and somehow persuaded her into his home? Was Charlene finally about to receive justice?
He was put on bail, but then he was released from bail. So they said no more charges were to be brought. They said they'd keep me informed, but then they said they'd released him on bail, pending inquiries, and then they let him go. He was under suspicion, but then they let him go. They didn't have enough evidence.
Police have not charged this man with anything in relation to Charlene Downs. In fact, no one has been arrested or charged in relation to her disappearance since, and Charlene's family is still waiting for answers.
Not something I'm ever going to forget. We're ever going to really get over. I've had to come to terms with it, but I'm never going to get... It's not something I'm ever going to get over until I get closure. I need closure and justice. We can't even move on or anything without that. I also lost my son as well. It impacted on his life as well because he was 12, took his teenage years away, impacted badly on him, and it impacted on all of us.
To add more tragedy for the family, in 2021, Charlene's younger brother died of a drug overdose in the family home.
I've lost two children. Can't imagine, but I have to just carry on day by day and take each day as it comes. I can't do nothing else. If I sat and moped, I would crack up.
Charlene's sister, Rebecca, has struggled for two decades with unanswered questions.
I'm so sorry, God. Even bringing it back, it's... In life, you turn the telly on, you watch the news, you hear about it, people going missing, children going missing and stuff like that. You would never, ever, ever believe it to happen to you. I still live in hope. that one bit of if I live in hope, and that she's still alive. I have to. I let go of that. I've still got to be strong for my mum.
Rebecca's grief has been exacerbated by rumours circulating about her family in the town.
I want to say, basically, my family are innocent. We have done nothing wrong whatsoever. I can't get a job around here. I can't work around here. No one trusts us anymore. Why? Because we told the truth. My dad, he's not the best. No, he's not. He's innocent. He's done flip all wrong. We're still here. And if that was the case, do you think if we'd done anything, we'd be here now? I'm sorry, it makes me absolutely furious. And there's people still out there walking the streets, getting away with murder. And it's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting.
Charlene's family want justice and answers. But it's hard to know where to start with so many different possibilities. Was Charlene a victim of one of the convicted paedophiles questioned in the investigation? Ray Munro, who was staying in her home. Robert Ewing, who murdered Paige Cheevers. The man whose flat she was seen heading towards in the alleyway. Or was Charlene going into that alleyway to meet someone from the grooming gang, like many other schoolgirls in the town? Could there be someone else, not yet named in the police investigation, who was exploiting Charlene, either inside or outside of her family home? If Charlene was with a sex offender on the night she went missing, they would have had a vested interest in her keeping quiet about it. Or did Charlene Downs deliberately disappear? Tired of exploitation, she decided to seek a new life. Her sister Rebecca and mum Karen keep searching for the answers. They will never give up on Charlene.
We're never going to stop until while there's a breath in my body and while there's a breath in my family's body as well, and we're still going to get justice for her. Charlene's a person, not an object or something to be wrote about. She's my mum's daughter, she's my sister, and we just want people to do the right thing.
We need closure, we need justice. All I've got is a bench. I've got a bench in the crematorium and a plaque, and that's it, to remember her by. That's all we've got now. We have no grave, we have nothing. So I'm hoping and praying that somebody will have the courage one day, hopefully, we get some answers and some closure. Please come forward, please end our nightmare. It's gone on long enough now, and we've suffered long enough. We need answers, and we need to lay her to rest, and we need to know what went on. And we need justice above anything else.
In many cases, it takes just one piece of information to lead police and family to the answers they crave. If you know what happened to Charlene, or you remember seeing someone like her on or after the 1st of November 2003, your information could be vital. Even if you've never heard of Charlene Downs before listening to this episode, you could still help. Visit our website, themissingpodcast.org, where you'll find more information on this and every other case we featured in the series. On our site, you can join the conversation and help with the investigation. There's a dedicated forum, moderated carefully by Locate, where you can get updates on the case, share your theories, and discuss the facts with real investigators from Locate International. The series is also made with the help of Missing People,
a charity who offers support to the families of the missing. Their helpline is open to offer support and advice if you've been affected by anything in this episode. We can't say this enough. It takes just one person with the right information to solve any of the cases in this series.
The family of Charlene Downs hope that the information will soon arrive to solve this one.
The Missing is a What's the Story original podcast series. It's presented by me, Pandora Sykes. This episode was produced and written by Carla Wright. It's edited by Jack O'Kennedy. The executive producers for What's the Story Sounds are Daryl Brown and Sophie Ellis. This season, we're launching a new episode of The Missing every week. But if you don't want to wait, you can listen to them exclusively on What's the Story Crime. Just search for What's the Story Crime in Apple Podcasts or follow the link in our show notes to get access on whatever platform you prefer to listen on. All the information is also available on www.whatsthestorysounds.com/crime.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.